Thanks a lot, David. That's a good coverage of the book. I thought I would just pick up a little kind of the background. I mean, David's referred to quite a few bits of how we can interpret what it's saying. Let's just say that if I can put together all my little bits of notes, because I had notes and David covered some things and there are other bits I'd like to pick up on. I think the book of Joshua is reckoned to cover about a period of 20 years from entering the promised land and where it finishes with Joshua dying, unfortunately, without another successor. Joshua was a great successor to Moses, but then there wasn't one, and we had the time of the judges, which David has also covered previously. When we read the Old Testament, there are a few things we need to remember. We've often mentioned these before in various books that when we've looked at them in the Old Testament. One is that this thing of numbers, because this is about God's promises. And this was a time when what we would consider facts weren't as important as meaning. So a lot of numbers are more important about what they mean than what they actually represent to us as specific numbers. So, like the 3 days they waited before that they prepared to go across the Jordan, well, three is a symbolic number. So it probably wasn't 3 days. And then you've got 40 days comes up. 40 days was a generation. It was a way of saying a generation. So you can't sort of say, well, it said it was, 480 years because it says it's 480 years. No, that's because it's 4 times 12, which is a significant number. In the battle with Ai, it talks about 12,000 men, 12 symbolic number. So again, although it gives us the right idea, we need to remember that this isn't a hard and fast number that we're going to stake our claim on God's faithfulness because of this specific number. That's very foolish. The archaeology is quite interesting because, like most areas of science, it's always changing as they discover new things. Now, I hadn't realized that Jericho actually is considered to be the oldest known inhabited city because they think they can trace it back to 9,000 BC, which is a long way. And in that time, it was built and rebuilt many times. So, how do you find that little slot when Israel attacked it? And of course, the walls would have been made of mud bricks, not stone. You see drawings and pictures and you get the impression that it's stone, but it's not. It would have been mud. So it's not quite the same strength as a stone wall would have been. Another thing is that archaeologists like to see pottery and statues, idols, things like that, because that very clearly in a layer shows a new generation, a new people group there. But of course, the Israelites didn't bring most of these things. They didn't have their own culture when it comes to things like pottery, and they certainly didn't have idols, and they didn't build temples. So this is one reason why archaeologists kind of tend to dismiss a lot of things because it's not producing, giving them the information that they like, the hard and fast evidence. So we can trust a lot of what the Old Testament says, and archaeology sometimes supports it, and sometimes the evidence isn't there. It very rarely denies it. The victories, it talks about utter destruction of people groups, which was just a way of saying we won. We did a good job, thoroughly won. I mean, there was a lot else going on, if I can find all my little notes, because the Philistines were newcomers at that time as well. around this time, that's when they invaded from Crete and took over some of the coastal towns. Egypt actually was the overriding power in Canaan. It was already there, and every now and then it would go and quell problems with its city states. And of course, these city states, we see the kings getting together to fight Israel, but they were often fighting each other as well. So there's a lot of fighting going on in this time. One interesting example is that archaeologists have found this stone monument erected by a king of Egypt in 1220 BC, which declared that Israel was laid waste. Well, there's not a lot of evidence of that because they obviously survived quite well. But this was the way that they spoke. This was the way that they wrote their histories. These people groups continued to survive and cause trouble to the Israelites, of course. That's why Judges is full of attacks from Midianites and Philistines, because these other groups were still around. And there were lots of cities that were like thorns in the flesh of Israel because they hadn't actually conquered them. There was a bit in Judges 3:5 said the Israelites lived among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, Jebusites. They took their daughters in marriage, gave their own daughters to their sons, and served their gods. So there were an awful lot of these people still there who weren't utterly destroyed in the way that we would understand the language nowadays. It's likely that Joshua did write a lot of the history of Joshua, or he had people writing it at the time and recording what everybody had, because they needed a record of who was given what, you know, to avoid arguments in future, which is probably why there's so much detail in there. But you can tell it's been edited in its future, because every now and then it says this place now known as this place, and haven't we read this in the book of whatever. And most of it seems to have been written around 1045 BC. I was just going to say one other thing, that the crossing of the Jordan, interestingly, has a modern parallel, because in 1927, an earthquake caused exactly the same effect when an avalanche from high clay riverbanks dammed the river at Adam, the same place, for 21 hours. So obviously this is the kind of thing that happened that enabled the people to cross the Jordan. And it was because it was in flood that the cave-in happened. And it's another miracle of God's timing. Right. Q&A time. I will try and pick up the Facebook comments. And I'll do that first before going to Zoom. I'll say hi, Kathy. You keep saying hi to us, but we're busy doing the teaching. So Jane says, for the sake of those of us not looking at Facebook, we don't change. Today, people walk away from church and God when the church doesn't do what they think it should do. I believe many churches suffer like this. How do you think we can address this problem? Thank you, David, for an excellent exposition. And Gail says, good word, David. Do you want to come back on that, David, as you're the speaker?
Sure. It's a difficult one. Yes, people often walk away because they're not getting what they want. And this is something Jesus told us was going to happen. You know, he said, when he tells the story of the sower, he says there are weeds, people who back off because they've got too many other things happening. And there's the seed that fell on rock. It started growing okay, but it didn't have any roots. So as soon as things got difficult, people fell away. This happens right back in the Bible. When the people of Israel were, that they were prayed, that they were so delighted when Moses came. Moses had come to Egypt. Moses was going to save them. And then Moses goes to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh not only says, don't believe you, he says, double Israel's workload. If they're going to play, if they're going to whinge about going out into the desert, they're obviously not working hard enough. And the people of Israel are going to Moses, we hate you. As simple as that. As quick as that. I think often we need to make sure people understand what the Bible says. And at the same time, we have to be prepared to accept some people are not going to accept it because it's not what they want.
Yeah, I'd say, it isn't it very much about us seeing it as church is about us, not about God? It's we often see it as about us, not the community. It is very easy to become dissatisfied and feel that it doesn't serve what we want. But this is the importance of staying close to God and hearing from him. And whoever said church was easy, the early church wasn't easy. They had to have deacons to sort out arguments.
Yeah.
And they had very mixed up congregations, as we saw when we looked at Corinthians. I think that we need to, I think our, we're always influenced by our society. We have an attitude that comes from where we are. I think we mentioned this last time as well, that it's like we see church almost like a supermarket where we want this kind of beans, not that kind of beans. We want it low salt, not normal salt. And if we have a product and they change its formulation slightly, we get really upset and say, that's not what I want. And we can treat church like that as well and not value it for what it is. You know, we could learn a lot from the persecuted church, who are very grateful to have any form of church and to have support. Okay, I see nothing else on the Facebook things. Zoom, anyone got a thing on Zoom? Nothing. This happens a lot, doesn't it? Oh, Samuel has a hand up. Be helpful if we could see and hear you, Samuel.
Yes. Right, I just unmuted. I've just put my thing on mute and the video off because, of course, that's to do during the talk. But it is, what I find it really interesting because, as David said, they needed to know about these numbers at that time. It was very important to them because we don't realize in our modern context just how important knowing who, what everyone got was, because we just don't look at that sort of thing because we don't live in that sort of culture. Whereas in collectivist cultures, it's all about who gets what and about what your family has and what they do. And I also found it very telling when David said that God says that you must serve him completely, because that's something that Jesus said. He actually says, as you said, he actually says the same thing. He actually says no one can have two masters, and that's basically what Joshua was saying as well. Well, I should say that's what God was saying to Joshua as well.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The only other thing, I'd just say one thing about the territory. I didn't get round to it because I felt that I'd been talking for a bit longer than I planned to. We were running out of time. There's an argument that part of Joshua may have been written while the people of Israel were in exile. John Goldingday believes this. Whether I agree with him or not, I'm not so sure. I think Dan is right when he says Joshua wrote this. But the point is, all of the prophets, when the people are in exile, are going back to the land and who had what. In Ezekiel, you get a really, really long and rather wearisome list of which tribe will live where when they get Israel back. Because for Israel, that was really important, that was essential to them. This is where we are. This is where we come from. This is our turf. And this is the turf God marked out for us. It does seem a bit odd to us, but in other countries that aren't Western, I'm sure it makes a lot more sense. I'm sure African people would have a very good understanding of what all that meant and why.
Okay, I will. Right. Bernie Pinner has put a chat on the Zoom. Fortunately, I saw it. I don't normally look at the chat. He says, it's been suggested to me that most of the stories in the Old Testament where people are slaughtered is simply a way of saying, my God is bigger than your God. Do you agree?
No, I don't, because the culture that they lived in was a culture where, I'm afraid, you had to fight each other, and you did fight each other. I think spiritualizing that is nice. It's a get out clause. It explains away a lot of things you might find uncomfortable, but it simply doesn't chime with the context in which the Bible was written, although I know plenty of us would like it to. I think this is why so many people in the West get really upset about so many non-Christians, actually, or liberal Christians, with apologies to any listening who feel they feel that way, get really upset about the killing you see in the Bible, because they say that's not how I want to live. That's not how I want to do things. And the answer is, well, of course it isn't. But you don't live in the time that Joshua and David and Moses lived.
Yes, I think you don't have to go as far back as the Old Testament to find culture where war is nasty and brutal and accepted as normal part of life. You know, God deals with us where we are in our place and time. And he tends to use the means that are normal. And so things are so different now. And aren't we blessed to live now and not in past times, even 100 years ago, life was much harder, and we often don't appreciate it. I was going to say, David, that we have this issue that people, I'm trying to remember the names now. Okay, the big name atheists really lay into us because of this supposed horrendous God.
Yeah, Richard Dawkins.
Richard Dawkins, that's the one. He's the main protagonist on this, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's in his book. How do we actually counter that? Because I think a lot of the time our problem is that the answer isn't simple. It's quite a long-winded answer where you need to study things.
To be honest, yeah.
Carry on. Yeah, please.
I'd start by saying, why are they asking me this question? Very often when someone does that, they're not actually interested in an answer. They're looking for a fight. And if they're looking for a fight, or they're looking for a reason to be difficult, there is not much point in trying to answer the question. I would actually respond with the question, if you are not a believer and you think everything I believe is rubbish, why are you harping on about this? Because if you think I'm believing something that's dumb, why do you even want to engage with me? But that there isn't a simple response. I think the mistake we make is trying to have one which will give us a headline answer. The answers to biblical questions are complicated, and we don't like complicated. We want an answer that can be covered in a headline. And often we don't get that with Christianity, because life isn't explained in a headline. It's more complicated.
Very true, David. Very true. Do we have any more questions or comments? Jane is liking the answers, David.
Pardon?
Jane is liking the answers, she says.
Okay, that's good.
Samuel has a hand up again.
Okay. Oh, no.
Yes, it was just to... Yes, it's just lowering the hand. That was just to say that, yes, you're right, David. People want what I would call cookie-cutter answers to these big questions, just ones that they are that are easy to digest. Unfortunately, you can't really have a snack answer. If you really want to know about these things and to understand them, you have to really have a full meal. You can't just expect to just have it in one easy thing that goes down quite quickly. You have to have something very filling that is going to take some time to eat, and you may even struggle with eating. But that's the point. That's one of the things I think you're saying, which is really good.
So you're saying like a big steak dinner instead of a packet of crisps.
Yes, so you need actually a three-course meal, not just a biscuit or two.
Right.
Thank you, Samuel. Okay. Can I ask, David, as you've done Judges as well, how do you read the move from the kind of successes in Joshua to what looks like pretty catastrophic failure in Judges?
That's an interesting question. For whatever reason, it looks like Joshua's generation either did not pass on what they learned, or they did and the other generation just weren't interested. I think it actually shows the point Joshua was making at the end of the book, that this guy's followed Moses around for oodles of time. Now he's done what Moses did. And he's come to the conclusion that if you try serving God on your own, it's too difficult. And that's what he tells the people. He knows they're going to rebel. Just like God, I think, knew Adam and Eve would rebel eventually. And it shows why we need a savior, because on your own, you can't do it. By the end of Judges, the people have decided the best solution's a king. But the problem, of course, is the only kind of person who would want to be king is the worst kind of person you could have. Oh, sorry, that's my phone making a noise. And the one person who might be a very good king doesn't actually want to be one. That's covered in Judges as well. And I think it shows humankind at its worst, humankind at its best with God, and why without a savior, you simply can't hack it by yourself.
Yeah, I mean, although it doesn't really say it in Joshua, my impression is that although on the whole they did what God told them to do, they still made compromises with the locals and didn't see themselves sufficiently as one people who are different. Even though that's kind of what comes out of this problem with the altar being built on the east side of Jordan. And, you know, they all took umbrage and said, you're trying to, you know, deny our God, which is a really good reaction in its principle, you know, why they were concerned. Because, of course, that bit at the end in chapter 24, you know, Joshua basically says to the people, don't make this promise because you can't keep it. And they say, yes, we will, we will. And quite clearly, they don't. And you are looking at a nation. You know, you're not looking at a family or even a town of people. You're looking at a nation who are scattered quite widely. And as we've seen with what was his name, who hid the treasure from Jericho, the failure of one person or one part can just affect the whole. And so we see this decline in Judges. Simon has made a comment on the last point we were talking about, David. Society today just doesn't have time to take time to absorb. Yeah, people don't want to spend the time applying real thought to issues. I think that's very true, Simon. We're all guilty of it. And it's something, in a way, we've lost, haven't we, with our speed of life, that you don't take time to chew the fat, so to speak. Mm. Right. I'm not going to push it and wait for hours for somebody to come up with anything else. I will say thank you, David, for a great coverage of the book. I think it's given us a good feeling for what happened and how to understand what's in there and why it's written the way it is.